Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will look at United Airlines' new safety video, while I see which new narrowbody will arrive overweight and late.
I'll look at delivery days at Boeing, and Joe will tell us about the final flight of the world's second-to-last DC-872.
Finally, Tom looks at Emirates' new London Heathrow SAF news.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And I wanted to start by talking United Airlines. I feel like I've been talking United Airlines a lot on the podcast recently. I don't know why. I have no special love for United Airlines, but, you know, also I don't hate them. But yeah, they've got more news. This week, I wanted to talk about their new safety video, because after months of work, they've debuted this new video called Safety in Motion.
Okay.
Now, this video follows a ball as it bounces its way through aircraft-inspired sets, and it features 17 real United Airlines employees demonstrating key safety procedures. The employees come from across the airline, including flight attendants, pilots, ground agents, and those working in its central operations teams. Now, although the soundtrack to the safety video is the 100-year-old song Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin, the video itself represents a more modern take on the airline's previous safety videos. United Airlines began a painstaking work of putting together the creative ideas for its safety video all the way back in June 2023, before later working in collaboration with the FAA to ensure that all safety standards were met. The video was finalized and approved in March 2024, and it began to appear on select aircraft from May 25th. From May 25th to begin on some of the aircraft that United has in its fleet. Obviously, it's going to take a while to roll it out across the board, but it's quite interesting just to see how much effort goes into making one of these that they've pretty much spent most of a year. It's taken most of a year to get it on board a plane from conception. Sasha Johnson, who's the Vice President of Corporate Safety for United Airlines, highlighted the importance of the pre-flight safety video, saying, "Safety starts with being prepared. We have ongoing rigorous safety training for our crews. We also make sure our customers know what to do in the event of an emergency. We're proud that our new safety video empowers passengers by giving them information and clear instructions." Now, over the course of the summer, United Airlines is going to roll the video out across its fast fleet, which itself is going to be a challenge because, you know, United Airlines has one of the biggest fleets in the world. It currently operates a fleet of 953 aircraft, according to CH Aviation, with a further 714 aircraft on order. But also, when you think about that, I don't know the United Airlines fleet like the back of my hand, so take this with a pinch of salt. But if this was someone like Lufthansa or British Airways, you know, a lot of the smaller aircraft don't actually have the capability to play videos, safety videos, or if they do, they're not utilizing them. So I wonder if this is really going to be across the full fleet, or if there's going to be some sort of smaller aircraft where you'll still get a manual demonstration from the crew. But I am not a fan of the United Airlines safety video. I'm almost getting annoyed at all of the storytelling that's going into videos these days to keep people's attention. I feel like the ball constantly in motion, it just, to me, it seems a bit cheesy. The thing I don't like is that it's meant to be like a whole non-stop trip throughout the whole set. But in reality, you know, they keep changing the camera angles and there's no way this was done in one take.
No.
So, you know, I'm not a big fan of that, but also I don't think it's as bad as Qantas's 10-minute long safety video that was launched in January. And that faced a huge backlash on social media, forcing Qantas to reveal a highly cut version would be shown on board flights.
10 minutes, though.
Yeah. I watched it before realizing how long it was in the morning. And I was like, oh, that's like half of my day gone now. I would have to say my all-time favorite safety video comes from the other side of the world. And I know I just knocked the storytelling aspect of videos, but one airline that I think really frequently nails this is...
I can guess. New Zealand, Hobbiton one. Yeah.
My favorite safety videos of theirs is the one celebrating The Hobbit. And, you know, if you're not a Lord of the Rings fan, it's probably super boring. But I love all of the little cameos and the filming locations, the characters. You know, in fact, when I rewatched it after we went to New Zealand at New Year, I kept saying, oh, this bit was filmed there. And, oh, we saw where this bit was filmed. But Joe, what's your favorite safety airline video?
Honestly, it's the Virgin America safety dance. It was short-lived, but it was kind of viral at the time, and I think it's amazing. It's so catchy and really sticks in your head. I think, like, from my opinion, the United Airlines one, I think it's great that they're using actual United employees rather than actors. I mean, you know, these people are doing the safety demonstrations every day, so why not use them? But I have to agree, I didn't really get the blue ball thing and the whole, like, the way it was filmed, but I guess it does what, you know, it does what it needs to do. The safety instructions are fairly clear. I don't know. Let's see how flyers react and then we'll draw our conclusions, I guess.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about a new aircraft competitor, a new narrow body that the world is expecting, or, well, maybe not the whole world, because there are some difficulties with that. Overweight and late, that's usually how I describe myself, but in this occasion, I'm talking about Russia's MC-21, which is its narrow body airliner. And, you know, in some alternative reality where there's this massive backlog of airliners from Boeing and Airbus, now could be a great time for Russia's domestic airliners to capture some of their short-haul customers. But this isn't another reality. And over the last 2 years, Russia's domestic airliner production has pretty much been at a standstill. This obviously came after the 2022 invasion of Ukraine. The West reacted by placing crippling sanctions on the Russian aviation industry. And this has really knocked the production of things like the MC-21. They were both the MC-21 and the Sukhoi Superjet 100 and other airliners designed by Russia were extensively using Western components, including the engines. Russia obviously can't use those parts anymore. So what we've heard this week is that it's now estimated that when Russia's MC-21 does finally enter service, it's going to be almost 6 tons heavier than it was first planned to be. That will obviously result in a shorter range and a lower capacity than was originally planned for the type. So this is all because of what we call Russification, which kind of describes the process of removing Western parts and replacing them with Russian-produced parts, because obviously they can't source the Western parts anymore. So the Russification of the MC-21-300 is going to make it 5.75 tonnes heavier. It was originally going to have the Pratt & Whitney PW1000G engines, but of course it's now impossible to use them for this aircraft. And in fact, around 40 to 50% of the MC-21 was going to be using Western imported parts. The weight has significantly reduced the flight range and the capacity of the MC-21. And according to reports from Russian media, the current range is expected to be reduced to less than 2,800 kilometres or 1,740 miles. In fact, some sources say it could even be squeezed down to less than 2,000 kilometres, which is 1,240 miles. Using these Russian substituted components will basically mean that the MC-21 can never meet its original specifications because Russia just doesn't have the technology in-house to achieve these targets. So to put this in perspective, you know, the MC-21 is designed to compete with other narrow-body aircraft. And if its range does shake out to be 1,740 miles, let's say, that is significantly worse than any other narrow-body an airline could choose. So, for example, the 737-800, which is obviously an older type, flies up to 2,296 miles. The more modern MAX 8 can go more than 4,000 miles. The A320ceo goes about 3,500 miles. And the Neo variant also pegs in at more than 4,000. And to kind of give this some reality in Russian aviation, if they wanted to fly from Moscow to the eastern city of Yakutsk, that's a distance of 3,038 miles. So the MC-21 couldn't even make this domestic trip without stopping for fuel. Of course, you know, this is all hearsay at the moment. We haven't got the specifications for the MC-21. But what is exciting, if it comes true, is that Yakovlev say that the new Russified MC-21 will take to the skies for the first time by June, which is next month. So maybe at that point we'll get more visibility on what it exactly means for the outcome of the MC-21. But, you know, even if it could fly a bit further, as it was originally intended to, it's not going to be flying to Europe anytime soon because the EU has withdrawn certification for all Russian aircraft. So the SSJ-100, the MC-21 are not permitted to fly into the EU. The aircraft had a few orders, mostly from domestic customers, but of course, this new shorter range, lower capacity, late delivery means that it's going to be far less attractive to international buyers. If you've been following the MC21, you'll know it was supposed to be entered into service some time ago. The latest update we've had is it's now 2025 to 2026. But, you know, Russia is pouring so many resources into this war. It's very likely that that will be pushed back because it's not really focusing on developing aircraft right now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we saw it in Dubai, it was still, it was an interesting plane. I think that's how I would politely describe it.
Just looked like an A320, really, didn't it? It didn't look anything sort of out of the ordinary.
I think it looked different. You know, like you could see that, you could really see, like, for example, on the engines, just the quality of workmanship on the Russian engines just wasn't up to what you see on an Airbus. You could see where the parts had been welded together on the front intake part, whereas, you know, you can't really see that on an Airbus.
No.
So, yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, I doubt it will be sold outside Russia, certainly not in the short term. If it goes less than 2,000 miles, I can't see many airline customers really finding that appealing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wanted to talk about a competitor of the MC21. No, not a competitor by any means, but I wanted to talk about Boeing and its delivery timelines, because that's been quite hot in the news this week as well. Various heads of airlines have been talking about it, but let's start with the long overdue Boeing 777X, which, again, you know, we saw in Dubai that time with the MC-21. That was supposedly originally meant to enter commercial service, I think, 2 years ago, 2022, but I've lost count at this point when it was meant to. I've seen some people saying 2020, 2022. If you know better than me, Joe, let me know. but Singapore Airlines seems fairly confident that the wide body is finally coming next year. So Go Chun Fong, who's Singapore Airlines chief executive officer, says that the airline still expects to take delivery of its first 777-9 in late 2025, despite some executives hinting that the type's deliveries could slip further. According to a report by Flight Global, Fong made the comments during the group's latest financial results presentation to analysts. And meanwhile, during Boeing's Q1 2024 earnings call, Brian West, who's the chief financial officer and executive vice president of Boeing, shared no additional updates on the certification timeline for the 777X, but he did say, "Finally, on the 777X, we continue to progress along the program timeline. We still expect first delivery in 2025. We'll follow the lead of the FAA as we progress through the process, including working to obtain approval from the FAA to begin certification flight testing." That's also worth remembering is that, you know, right now they're still doing the sort of general Boeing flight testing and not the certification flight testing.
Okay.
So this contrasts with what Tim Clark said in March, because he suggested that deliveries could be delayed until 2026. And it seems that Lufthansa CEO Carsten Spohr is kind of in the same camp as Tim Clark with Boeing delays in general, because when asked by the Neue Zürcher Zeitung about the impact of Boeing's aircraft delivery delays that he had that have had on Lufthansa's operations, Spohr said, "This is extremely annoying and costs us a lot of money. However, I'm sure that Boeing will get the problems under control. The industry needs two strong providers. Everyone has an interest in Boeing being able to build great aircraft more reliably again soon." He also suggested his confidence in safety of the Boeing aircraft that the carrier flies, highlighting that half of the planes taking off multiple times daily worldwide are made by Boeing, and how flying is still one of the safest forms of transport. But back to the Middle East. you may remember that Emirates and Fly Dubai made a huge Boeing order at last year's Dubai Air Show. So the CEO of Fly Dubai, Gaif Al Gaif, lovely guy I've met several times, doubts that Boeing can deliver the airline's first 787 by 2026 as originally planned. During the recent Arabian travel market held at the Dubai World Trade Center last week, he mentioned that he could not disclose too many details about the airline's plans for its Dreamliners because he doubts that Boeing can meet the 2026 target. And he said, "We're not sure if Boeing can meet the 2026 deadline given the delays it's experiencing in deliveries. So we first want to make sure that we have the new aircraft on a specific date before we can talk about the other things." However, he did add a little color on what might be happening with the jets. He said, "The main goal of the 787 will be to fly us farther and into new markets. I think of London in Europe, Bangkok, Thailand, maybe also Australia, which the Dreamliners will enable us to achieve with their exceptional range." Now, I think it's really exciting that he said London in Europe, because that was one of the first ones that I said as soon as this order was announced. I was like, I bet you they will go to London, Stansted.
Definitely, definitely.
So, watch this space.
Yeah, exciting stuff. I can't wait to see Fly Dubai reaching new places, and Indigo as well with their wide body order. I think it's going to be exciting to see where they go to.
Yeah.
But from new aircraft coming along to aircraft that are almost disappearing from our skies entirely, because NASA retired its DC-8 flying lab this week, officially with its last flight. So it's never going to fly again. Boo-hoo.
Oh, dear.
So it's had the aircraft for over 37 years, and it's a specially modified Douglas DC-8. Functioning as an airborne science laboratory. So over the years, it's performed dozens of missions, helping scientists at NASA do experiments that would be impossible at ground level. But, you know, much as all good things do, the DC-8's time in our skies had to come to an end eventually. And that happened earlier this week when the jet was flown from NASA's Armstrong Flight Research Center in Edwards, California, to an airfield near Idaho State University. So the 55-year-old DC-8 with registration N817NA departed from Edwards Air Force Base at about 10 o'clock local time before assuming its especially low cruising altitude of just 3,500 feet for its farewell final flight. Along the route to retirement, it made several notable appearances, saluting the teams it has worked with for over almost four decades of service with NASA. The aircraft wrapped up its time in the skies with a final flyover around South Bay near San Jose in California, and some spectacular low passes over the runway at Moffett Federal Airfield in Mountain View, which is where NASA has its Ames Research Center. So, having bid farewell to NASA employees in Silicon Valley, the aircraft headed north for a scenic flyby around San Francisco Bay before climbing to a cruising altitude of 21,000 feet and heading east to Idaho. It made its last ever landing at Portocello Regional Airport shortly after 2 in the afternoon local time. Luckily, this is not going to be the end of the world for the DC-8 because it's not going to be scrapped. In fact, it's entering retirement at the university, which will help to train future aircraft technicians through hands-on maintenance technology programs. So the NASA DC-872, it has a uniquely retrofitted cabin, and it's along with its onboarding equipment, it has the capability to gather data at lots of different altitudes, which can then be used across dozens of disciplines, from hydrology and meteorology to biology and cryospheric sciences. And of course, it's played a really important role in studying the effects of global warming. According to NASA, it specifically specialized in four areas of research in particular, which was sensor development, satellite sensor verification, space vehicle launch or re-entry tracking, and studies of the Earth surface and atmosphere. It had actually finished working for NASA on April the 1st when it completed its final mission and returned to Armstrong. But it's not going to be the end for NASA's airborne laboratory either, because NASA apparently has a replacement plan for this program. The organization intends to replace the jet later this year with a Boeing 777-200ER, which it reportedly acquired for $30 million. Interestingly, though, this is the second to last DC-872 in the world in operation today. So that leaves us with only one left in the entire world. And that one is owned by Samaritan's Purse. It's 55 and a half years old and was originally delivered to Finnair in 1969. But it's been with that Christian humanitarian aid organisation since 2015. So one less DC-872 in our skies, only one left to spot. Have you ever spotted one, Tom? I've never seen one in person.
I mean, I could very well have seen it without realising, but it's not something that I've ever sort of knowingly seen.
Yeah. Well, good luck to NASA with its brand new airborne laboratory. I can't wait to see the 777 in action, but a sad day when we wave goodbye to the DC-8, I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have a good segue here. It will be a sad day, but I just spoke about Fly Dubai from Dubai to London. But sticking to that theme, another airline that flies between the two cities has some news in London, and that is, of course, our favourites, Emirates. Emirates has announced that it's taken delivery of sustainable aviation fuel from Shell Aviation at London Heathrow Airport. And giving an overview of the months ahead, Emirates added that more than 3,000 metric tons of neat SAF blended with conventional jet fuel will make its way to the fueling infrastructure network of the airport until the end of summer 2024. Adel Arreda, who's the Deputy President and Chief Operations Officer of Emirates, commented, "Emirates is eager to take this next step in our SAF journey with Shell Aviation and London Heathrow supporting us with the fuel supply arrangement in one of our biggest operations outside of Dubai." Now, I just think that's quite interesting, biggest operations. I think you did some story several years back, maybe even before COVID, how London was basically 25% of Emirates' operations or something crazy like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
For the first time, the carrier is going to be using SAF to power some of its flights at London Heathrow, and it will be it will use efficient reporting methodologies to account for, track, and trace the delivery of SAF there. The sustainable fuel purchased from Shell will be supplied to the existing airport fueling infrastructure to reach the aircraft jet engines. According to Ross Baker, Chief Commercial Officer at Heathrow, with commitments from airlines like Emirates, the airport expects support the use of up to 155,000 tonnes of SAF this year. Heathrow's SAF initiative is expected to support UK government policies and help promote clean energy investments. The UK government has mandated a 10% SAF target for all flights departing from the nation by the end of the decade and an ambitious goal of 22% SAF by 2040. So these new rules are going to start taking effect from the end of next year. Just next year in general. But Emirates' deal with London Heathrow, it's the largest volume of SAF it's purchased to date, but it's not the only volume. It's an addition of destinations where it's using SAF, including Amsterdam, Paris, Lyon, and Oslo. So exciting to see Emirates doing its little bit for the world.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the general feeling around SAF is that it is coming, even though there's obviously issues with the supply and demand calculations. But I think it's going to play a big part in what we do as an industry over the next few years. You know, while we're waiting for new aircraft to come online, obviously SAF is very important. So good on Emirates for doing more on that front, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think that's about all we've got time for on today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And as usual, welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.